We made it. Look, if you can hear my voice, it's Friday. The week is coming to an end. Glorious, glorious day. Sam Rogowski here, Sam Nation, on the Sam Nation Radio Network, coming to you loud and clear from the bunker, a.k.a. the studio in an undisclosed location deep behind the orange curtain. Today, yes, I'm going to get into the California primary a little bit later. I have a plan. I've thought about this. Put my thinking cap on. I don't know if you'll like what I have to say, but I have a plan of how we thwart this pending disaster, at least for the gubernatorial race. So stay tuned for that. I also will get into, trust me, because as a lawyer, I'm so curious about this Twitter ruling. If you missed this, a big case out there where Trump and one of his communications people, Scavino is his name, were sued by an institute and some other plaintiffs alleging that they were harmed by the fact that the president blocked them on Twitter. And the court came down and said, you can't do it. I'm going to give you a full breakdown of this because pretty much everything I've read out there is crap. And you know why it's crap? I'll tell you why it's crap. Because nobody took the time to read 75 pages of this absolutely insane opinion. Well, I did. And I did it for you. So please stay tuned for that. Yes. North Korea. Okay. The scoop is this. Trump probably walked away minutes, hours, days, whatever, before North Korea was going to publicly walk away, because this is what you do in a negotiation. If you've missed it, there was a big letter that went out yesterday where Trump said, look, sorry, Kim Jong-un, thanks for releasing three hostages. That was really nice of you, my friend. But you know, these radical statements that you're making and threats of nuclear war, not helpful. So the United States is not going to be attending the summit. Talk to you later. Now, the parts of the letter that got the most press, I would say, are the ones that were bellicose, right? Where Trump is, you know, using threatening language and comparing what destruction our nuclear arsenal would reap or would bear over the one that North Korea does would. And it was just this sort of that's what got most of the play. But in the letter, if you parse it out, there's an out for Kim to come back to the table. And this is normal. The point is, this is all normal. And everybody that's hand-wringing out there, I think is missed the mark. Look, you can walk away from a negotiation if you think that the other side wants a deal as much, if not more, than you do. The other time you walk away from a negotiation is if you think or believe, intelligently believe, that the other side believes that you don't need the deal as much as you do, right? So there's either an imbalance of what each side needs to get, where your opponent needs more than you do, or at the very least, a situation where your opponent believes that they need the deal more than you do. So let's unpackage that. What do we want from the deal? Well, I don't even know if we necessarily want regime change or we want unification on the North Korean peninsula. We just don't want a crazy dictator who is financially starved to possess nukes. Now, I've added the financially starved as a consequence of decades of very severe economic sanctions. I added that detail in because one of the chief problems that we have with countries like Pakistan getting nukes is that they began selling them on the open market to the highest bidder. You know, I'm pretty confident I can say that when Israel developed a nuclear bomb, that they didn't start selling it to radical Islamic terrorists. But all bets are off with a country like North Korea for no other reason. It's not even an ideological thing, but for no other reason that they need the cash. They need the money. And if you are a terrorist organization right now and have, you know, maybe some loose folding money, What are you trying to acquire? You're trying to acquire, at the very least, material to build something called a dirty bomb. So you're looking for nuclear waste, which a country like North Korea, even if they haven't built a sophisticated weapon, is already in the process of amassing and acquiring. So that's a problem. The other thing is you always want to be able to keep a country like North Korea in check, and you do that by knowing that there's no mutual assured destruction, that they don't have a nuclear bomb. You've got the nuclear card and they don't. So on one hand, it's a proliferation issue. On the other hand, it's simply we always want to be able to checkmate them in a few moves. Or one move, if you will. That's our objective. Now, what's their objective? Regime survival. Nothing else. If we go dark on them, and at the same time begin to move around military assets, what is Kim Jong-un thinking in the back of his head? He's thinking, there's a very real possibility that 3 months from now, General Mattis is the first, protector general of the North Korean protectorate. He's looking at a military takeover of his country. And there is, I would say, there's some precedence for this. We've done it before. And so if there's any good that has come from Iraq and from Libya, it's that Trump can go into a negotiation with Kim Jong-un and say, look, we've done it. We've taken out tin horn dictators who have pissed us off. Now, I'm not making a judgment, a call on the wisdom of those maneuvers. But I'm simply illustrating that there now are very real examples that have the Kim regime nervous. The North Koreans are nervous about this. So the analysis, and some out there are saying, well, this is such a win for North Korea, we've walked away. I don't necessarily think so. I don't think this is a win. This is not the final statement or action that we're going to hear here. This is going to continue. But it's part of a strategy, and the strategy is to make them believe. Now I'm to the second part, the psychological part. Make them believe that they have more to lose than us. Do you really think, as a consequence of us walking away, or let me say this, is there a possibility in North Korea's mind that as a consequence of a deal not getting worked out, that there could be regime change in the United States, that North Korea could annex, literally annex and take over the United States of America? They're not delusional. They're rational actors. No, there's no chance that their worst case scenario matches ours. Our worst case scenario is we lose the West Coast and they actually have a missile that can reach us. I'm being serious. That's our worst case scenario. Their worst case scenario is they're erased from the map. Kim Jong-un is turned into ashes, okay? So I'm telling you that we have the stronger hand, and we've always had the stronger hand. And the thing that just frustrates the hell out of me, and has for years, is past administrations, Republican administrations even, but especially Obama, have gone into every one of these negotiations acting like we have everything to lose. And the reason for this, and this is, I think, maybe the most important thing to understand when we look back and we analyze what went wrong with the Iran deal, what went wrong with all of our negotiating. Bill Clinton, this is classic Clinton administration nonsense with Kim Jong-un's dad, Kim Jong-il. We gave away the store. We would just always give away the store, acted as though we had everything to lose and they held all the cards. Why? The reason is simple. The objectives for politicians running those deals were always short-term political. It was short-term politics that mattered to them. Can I walk away from this with a quick win, the same way Neville Chamberlain did after visiting Hitler in Berlin, fly back to the United Kingdom and wave up in his air, there will be peace in our time. Short-term political gain. On that day, waving that piece of paper, Chamberlain was a very popular dude. I'll tell you that. Well, I'm not giving anything away when I tell you how that story ended. Not good. Short-term optics, right? The way things look, how it plays out in the media, the accolades that you get today, don't matter a hill of beans a year or two or 10 down the road when what you've done is put us in a worse position. Eventually, the seeds of weakness grow into poisonous fruit. Grow to bear poisonous fruit, I should say. And that is exactly what happened. We never negotiated from a position of strength. Obama in particular, Clinton was another one, and I would even argue the Bush administration in between. They all wanted a quick political win. Bush was distracted with Iraq. He was distracted with Islamic terror. And what did he want? He wanted to have something to take home and say, hey, we're doing something. We're being tough. So in that sense, I don't put any stock, and I'm pleased. One of the attributes that I like about Trump is that he doesn't necessarily care about winning with the media. He understands the media will, I mean, Trump could go out there and do everything the media wants him to do, and they will still hate him. And he understands that. He has not, as of yet, he still may, but he's not as of yet committed the deadly sin that every conservative politician does when they get into office. Here in California, Schwarzenegger, for example, who betray us, who betray their promises in a desire to make nice, play nice with the opposition. The opposition is out to destroy us. They're out to destroy you, Mr. President, so you don't give in to them. And he's not doing it right now. He doesn't care how this looks optically. He's saying this is, you know, we'll see what happens. In fact, here's the president speaking Tuesday, throwing cold water on the North Korea summit. He's asked about conditions by a reporter. Listen to this exchange.
What are your conditions for a meeting with Kim Jong-un?
I'd rather not say, but we are working on something. And, you know, there's a chance that it'll work out. There's a chance, there's a very substantial chance that it won't work out. I don't want to waste a lot of time, and I'm sure he doesn't want to waste a lot of time. So there's a very substantial chance that it won't work out, and that's okay. That doesn't mean it won't work out over a period of time, but it may not work out for June 12th.
Clearly. That's obvious. If you set a termination point for a negotiation to finish, what does that signal to the other side? You have to walk away from a deal. Obama would do this. The Obama administration, Hillary Clinton, Secretary of State, Kerry, these Kokomo Jokomos were doing this all the time. We are going to come back with a deal. That's like me going, representing a client, saying, I'm walking home with a settlement. I don't care what it's for. Client wants $1 million. No, I'm walking home with a settlement. And that's, look, yes, exactly. Rob, you're right. Exit date in Iraq, exit date in Afghanistan. This is classic Obama era shenanigans. And it's an enormous statement of weakness. Keeping this open-ended, there is, you know, hey, there are negotiations in place. And I promise you, for all of you that are hand-wringing right now, I promise you that North Korea has far more to lose than we do. Now, here's Nancy Pelosi opining on the North Korea summit. A reporter asks her and references another negotiation in a not too distant past where people walked away from the table. Listen to this.
Historically, we have seen situations where there have been summits which have gone south. I think Reykjavik in 85 with Gorbachev and Reagan, and that actually proved to be good later on. Looking at this through that sort of prism, do you see the potential of maybe this being a good thing, that maybe it actually results in something better down the road, or what's your interpretation?
I think it's a good thing for Kim Jong-un. Here you had a thug, a person who killed all his own family members, a person who runs a police state, being legitimized by the President of the United States. They were on a par with each other. He got global recognition and regard. He's the big winner. And when he got this letter from the President saying, okay, never mind, he must be having a giggle fit right there now in North Korea, in Pyongyang.
Okay. Look, Nancy Pelosi is taking everything and politicizing it. I understand that. But I just don't believe this fundamentally. This is not how real world negotiations work. And I also think, I mean, look, if Trump only sought a military option and didn't directly engage with Kim Jong-un, what would Nancy Pelosi be saying? He's not giving diplomacy a chance. Right? That's what her mantra would be. See, Trump can't win, right? But at the end of the day, who do you trust with this negotiation? Trump or Nancy Pelosi? Well, let's throw that out there. Oh, my goodness. Anyway, I don't think there's a lot to fear, folks. I think that this is all part of the process. And I'm between Trump and John Bolton, the national security team, Mike Pompeo. This is being handled expertly. And it has to be handled from a position of strength. They, the North Koreans, have far more to lose. All right, don't go anywhere. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, back right after this.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Friends, if you live in California, this is the time of year to start feeling very depressed about it. I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but I don't see a Republican winning statewide office anytime soon. Sam Rogowski here, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network. Okay, June 5th, there's a primary. We now have an open primary in California. This is a brilliant plan devised to exclude registered Republicans from the process. Well, no. So now this is where my point is. You're not excluded. If you're a registered Republican, you are not excluded. You are allowed to vote, but everybody votes with you. And the two top vote getters are the ones who advance to the finals on Election Day. So right now, the big news this week is that a poll, a fairly comprehensive poll, to the extent that you can trust polls, USC Dorn's Life, LA Times, California poll taken from April 18th to May 18th, found that Gavin Newsom, yes, the former mayor of San Francisco, lightweight loser of California, is in the lead with a massive, I mean, he's 21%. He's the top vote getter. Now, here are the top contenders, if you will. Gavin Newsom is at 21%. Antonio Villaraigosa. Oh, my gosh. Oh, well, I know we have some out-of-state listeners. If you're not in California and you have not heard of Antonio Villaraigosa, you're a lucky person. If he hasn't affected your life in some way, you're very lucky. Think of him as a far stupider version of Justin Trudeau, right? He's the California Hispanic version of Justin Trudeau, and he is, beyond that, just dumb as a box of hammers or whatever you want to call it. He was a former mayor of Los Angeles. Antonio Villaraigosa, 11%. So Newsom has a 10-point advantage over Antonio Villaraigosa. Antonio Villaraigosa has a 1-point lead over John Cox, the Republican in the race. Then there's John Chang at 6%, Travis Allen, Delaney Easton. Then they trail off. So here's what I think. I can't believe I'm saying this. What if we all voted for Antonio Villaraigosa? See, let me explain why. Gavin Newsom, the last thing we want is Gavin Newsom. Gavin Newsom is just pretty enough to fool people into thinking he's competent. Antonio Villaraigosa he's not even going to work. When he was mayor of Los Angeles, he didn't even like showing up at the office. I mean, he was only at his desk, 5 hours a week or something crazy like that? Villaraigosa is the guy that took the state bar exam 3-4 times, never passed, and then just gave up on it. And when I say he's dumb, I mean he's dumb, okay? But more importantly, he's lazy. So the kind of Democrat I want in charge of the state is one that doesn't do anything. That's the best kind of Democrat you can get. There's no chance the Republican is winning this race. Remember I told you about the demographics in the state? There just is not, there's not enough, there are not enough Republican GOP voters to get a Republican GOP candidate in. The only kind of Republican, okay, and now I'm using air quotes, you can't see it, but let's pretend you're here. I'm using air quotes. The only kind of Republican that will win is a Donald Trump type Republican. I don't mean Donald Trump, but I mean a guy who is very independent from his party and has strong ideological views about cleaning up the state. It's going to be somebody who is a fiscal conservative and a social liberal. If you brought a common sense businessman, outsider, somebody who's not really necessarily political into the right race as a sort of a white knight in shining armor to save us from ourselves in California, that kind of person I think could win. But John Cox is not that guy. He really isn't. He's not getting traction. So we're going to end up in a race between Gavin Newsom and Antonio Villaraigosa if this poll is right. So keep it real. Let's put Villaraigosa on the ballot. At least it will be entertaining. Do you remember? Which convention was it where he held the floor vote? 12? It was 12. Yeah, I'm getting a little spacey here on the time. The 12, yeah, 2012, he goes up to hold the floor vote, just stutters his way through it because the nays had it. They're trying to get something passed, some resolution supporting Israel. And the pro-Hamas wing of the Democratic Party, which is large and powerful, they all were, no, boo, boo, boo. And he's like, I think the eyes have it. So embarrassing. Antonio also said his biggest accomplishment in L.A. while he was mayor, planting trees. Think about that. All right. We're going to get into the Knight case, the Twitter case. If you are fascinated by this, you ought to be, because there's huge private property and freedom of speech rights implicated in this. And I think it's a very interesting decision that came down from a federal judge in Washington, D.C. So you'll want to hear about this. Don't miss it. That's up next. Don't go anywhere. Short break. Back right after this.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam. Sam Majowski. You'll find him very anything. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Breaking rocks in a hot sun. I'm on the law in a low one.
Sam Rajofsky, Sam Nation, yes, coming to you here from the undisclosed location deep behind the orange curtain. Rarely wrong, but always right. And the reason we do this program, look, we try to give you the most important things that are happening during the week, oftentimes with a lawyer's perspective on it, and coming from, obviously from a strong conservative place. And with that, I want to talk about this Twitter decision. The case is called Knight First Amendment Institute versus Trump. Let me back away from this for a minute, though, and set it up like this. There are a number of conservatives right now who have had big complaints with Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Google, any of these masters of the universe in social media, claiming that these companies have silenced them, have deleted tweets, have deleted accounts, and have done so in an effort to purge right-wing opinions online. Now, my take on this, I think I've been very consistent here. My take on this has always been, these are private companies. I know we all interact on Twitter, we interact on Facebook, Instagram, whatnot, but still, these are private buildings, essentially, that are not buildings, but they're private places akin to a private building. You and I don't own it. The company that operates the social site, whatever it is, they own it. They control it. And we are, you and I, if we are users of the site, we are invited guests. When it comes to law and it comes to life philosophy, I am an enormous proponent of private property rights. Free speech, private property rights. And I'll tell you where this really radical prejudice of mine comes from. And it's quite simple. My parents escaped a communist country. They came here to the States in 1977. And what happened in Eastern Europe under Soviet occupation is pretty easy to describe. You couldn't own private property, and you weren't allowed to say what was on your mind. And so to me, private property rights are very important, and also freedom of speech is very important. This is, you know, quite simple. The most important characteristic of private property rights is your ability to exclude others, right? The right to exclude is what makes something private property. If you have a house, you own the house, what do you have a right to do? You can choose who does or does not go into that house. The same with a restaurant. Yes, the restaurant is open to the public. Anyone can go into the restaurant, but they have a right to refuse service to anyone. You'll even see that sign up in a restaurant. We have a right to refuse service. And in that sense, Twitter can do the same thing. You following me? If they don't like what Sam Nation writes on his Twitter account, which occasionally is very irreverent, and you should see what I've been writing lately. If you're missing it, follow me. But it's their playground. It's their house. It's their private property. They have the right to exclude. And so I've been quite vocal, actually, in my begrudging support of these social media sites. And I really do think this is where I believe this all sorts out. I do believe that they will eventually lose in the marketplace. If they exclude conservatives, they're missing half the country. And who wants to exclude half their customer base? If that's their business model, so be it. They're free to go out of business. But the government has no place in telling them how to operate. So the question now is, and this question went before the court, Donald Trump, using his Twitter account, can he do what? Block people, block users like you and I from his account. The court said no. I'm going to explain this when we come back, make this really simple and easy for you. I think you'll be, I don't know. I just want you to be informed and you decide. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, back after this.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, intrepid conservative voice, independent. Always independent, but certainly opinionated. Here we go. This case brought by someone called the Knight First Amendment Institute. This is a group that studies First Amendment issues. It's a think tank. I've never heard of them, but they're out there. They study, among other things, interactions on social media. All right. And they brought this lawsuit together with about six other Kokomo Jokomo people. I don't know who these people. I don't know who they are. They're nobodies. But they're all people who don't like Donald Trump, and they got blocked by Donald Trump for essentially tweeting at him or responding in the comment sections of his tweets some negative stuff. Okay? So they get blocked. They now are no longer able to interact with Trump on Twitter. They can't read his tweets. They can't respond to his tweets. They can't retweet his tweets. If you're not a Twitter person, they got blocked. Okay. That's all you need to know. And I And the court, by the way, this has been in the news, it's been a big story. The court has said, "You, Mr. President, you can't do that." And their reason for this is that even though Twitter is a private company, is a private space, not owned or controlled by the government, the little bit of it that was given to Donald Trump in 2009, well before he became president, now that he has become president, is actually become taken over by a government entity and thereby making it public property, essentially. That is the argument. That's the put in plain language part of this ruling that justifies this. But that's the example that the judge gives in there. She goes, well, basically, it's like a private airport that suddenly gets taken over by a public agency. That's not a private airport anymore. It's a public airport. Can you imagine, by the way, if a politician comes to your house to hold a fundraiser and goes to kick somebody out and you can't exclude that person from your house because the president is over and he... I mean, no, I'm literally saying, picture this, your living room, you've got Donald Trump in your living room, and somebody comes to the fundraiser. This happened to Hillary all the time. She'd have people come to the fundraisers and they'd heckle her. Do you remember these videos? They'd come and heckle her about whatever the issue was. And what would happen? They got kicked out. Well, nobody sued her and no liberal judges would allow a lawsuit like that to proceed. But it is not different. It is 100% analogous. Both involve private space. And whether that private space is digital or actually territorial, you know, a building or a piece of land, it's no different. Let me give you another example. Do you have a right to heckle the president? Well, of course you have a right to heckle the president. We have free speech in this country. The government can't prevent you from doing it. But if the president is on private property, the owner-operator of that private property, and even the president can order you removed. I'll give you an example. The hecklers at Trump's rallies, they're always in private arenas. Hecklers can be removed. You can do it. Obama had hecklers removed when he attended these. It happened all the time. This is nothing new. It's just these people are so obsessed with their hatred of Trump that they're contorting themselves into legal positions that don't make any sense. Now, I think everybody's talking about this as a First Amendment case. I think that this is a private property case. I think that this is a case that implicates private property rights in a very uncomfortable way. And if I were Twitter, if I was Jack What's-His-Face, the CEO of Twitter, I would be very nervous about this decision. These idiots are probably walking around Twitter headquarters high-fiving themselves. Ha ha, yeah, we showed Trump. Oh, we didn't even have to do it. We didn't have to punish him. The courts did. Ha ha ha. But in fact, a federal judge just declared that a piece of their private company can be taken over in part by the government simply by what? She actually puts it in there. She says, well, the day that he put 45th president of the United States in his bio, that's it. It became a government account. Are you kidding me? What kind of money backwards logic is this? Okay, a couple more closing thoughts on this topic. It's so damn interesting. Isn't this fascinating? And you can't just say this is about Twitter that you don't care about or that's about Trump that you don't care about, because you care about your rights. Trust me, sooner or later, you'll care about your rights. And when we get to this, we're going to talk about that squatter. Well, not a squatter, that kid that couldn't get his parents were trying to get him evicted from their house. Did you hear about this story? This ties into it, too. Private property rights, very important. Trust me, it's the foundation of what this country is all about. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, back right after this.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Johnny.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rogowski. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
I'll tell you, there's other things that are defective, highly defective with this rule, in this ruling. I think one of them is standing. So I don't want to get too heavy into constitutional law, but if you're going to bring a case in federal court, you have to have a grievance, right? You have to have something, you have to have a legitimate grievance, right? Something that affects you, and also something that can be remedied by the court. The court can fix it. But also you've got to be the person that has the injury, right? You've got to be the holder of the injury. So how is this Free Speech Institute allowed to stay in the game? They're not even like an advocacy group. They're a think tank. They're studying the question of free speech. Interesting. Glad you asked that question. Here's what the judge said. The judge said, quote, "The Knight Institute has sufficiently established an injury in fact. The infringement of its desire to read comments that otherwise would have been posted by the blocked plaintiffs in direct reply to @RealDonaldTrump tweets." What does this mean? It means this institute is losing out on the opportunity to study the interaction of these six losers talking trash on the president. That's it. That's their standing. That's their injury that they've suffered. Last time I checked, Donald Trump has how many million followers on Twitter? And they're worried. I mean, this is like being an ant scientist, right? And you're an ant scientist. What do they call them? It's the study of ants. Slips my mind. Anyway, you're studying ants and somebody comes along and smushes six ants. And you go and sue him because out of this entire anthill that is crawling literally with ants, you lost the opportunity to study these six ants. Oh, I didn't think that was the word. Myrmecology? Myrmecology is the study of ants. If you are a myrmecologist, today is your day. You got to mention on the program. Okay, so that has me. Like, these people, the lead plaintiff in the lawsuit should have been kicked out for not even having a case, right? Not even having an injury, right? From the get-go. But the real issue for me is this strange, contorted conversion of private property into public by virtue of Donald Trump having an account on Twitter that was his before, that is his now, and just because he's become president, suddenly it's a public domain. I give you an example. No, I gave you the example of the House. The president comes over to the House. What about a president or any politician, I guess, that goes to any piece of private property and is standing there talking? A heckler comes up and starts yelling at him. Is the president obligated to engage the heckler? Because that's part of what this is, right? By blocking somebody, you're refusing engagement. You're turning off your voice and their ability to speak to you. It's two parts. One is you're turning off their sound. Private property, I have no rights to hear anything that's going on. I don't have a right to even be there. Any participation, my being there is simply at the mercy of the owner of that piece of property. I'm just baffled by this. I am so baffled by this. And will it get it? Yes, it's been appealed. I'm sure it'll get overturned somewhere. But you never know. This thing could end up going up to the Supreme Court, because even these appellate courts are just absolutely insane. All right. Yes, I am going to talk about the 30-year-old kid that took his parents to court and try to get them evicted. I will get into this because I love the story on so many points. And then I'll also give you a bit of a political update on the Justice Department, everything going on there. The wheels are coming off. All of this Trump-Russia thing, it is literally turning to dust. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, don't go anywhere. I will be back.
We shall fight on the airwaves. We shall fight on Twitter and Facebook. We shall broadcast our program, whatever the cost may be. And if Sam Nation lasts for 1,000 years, men will say this was their finest hour.
Hi, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network. Okay, speaking of kids that have failed to launch, I don't know why this topic reminds me of next month. I have my 20-year high school reunion. Do you go to those, by the way? A lot of people don't now anymore because everybody that you want to interact with, you can by virtue of cell phones, internet, things like Facebook, Instagram, etc. You used to go to these reunions to see the people that weren't in your immediate circle of friends, to reconnect after a period of time, check in, and then leave. So I get the feeling either my class president, well, he's kind of a flake. So either my class president really just blew this thing off, or it got put hastily together last minute, or people just don't care, right? People, there's not a lot of interest. I think I'm going to go to it. But anyway, classically speaking, now 20 years on, this is really where the paths have separated. 10 years on, you're kind of still. It took me a long time to go to law school. And by my 10-year reunion, I wasn't a lawyer yet, and a lot of my peers had already become doctors or become lawyers, and you know, had really advanced with their careers. I was a late bloomer in many respects. So, you know, there it is. But 20 years on, you start. There's the divergent paths. You know, and I don't think, do you really show up at a reunion? Do you show up if you're, you know, overweight and just living in your parents' basement and life, you know, and playing video games? I don't know. Some people do. Some people just do. And I'll tell you what the common denominator to a lot of people I know that I've observed from a distance who have failed to launch. And it's pot. I'm going to tell you right now. I had this friend who was my best friend growing up, and this guy started smoking weed in high school. I didn't realize it at the time because I was oblivious, but he started smoking weed in high school. He then continued smoking weed through community college, and he smoked so much weed that he began to believe that he was the world's greatest genius. Okay? This is how I can best describe him. By the way, if you know people like this, you know I'm spot on, right? World's biggest genius. And so it is this friend that I am not going to name that I had in my mind's eye as I heard about this absolutely insane story about Michael Rotundo. Now, Michael Rotundo lives in upstate New York with his parents, and his parents have had it with their son, with their freeloading son who's been living in their house forever, and wrote him a series of eviction letters trying to get him out, and they ended up having to take him to court. Now, this week, they won their battle. Now, he's appealing it, supposedly, but they won their battle, and they got a court to issue a notice of eviction. Five letters, by the way, five letters. Oh, I have one of them here. Hold on. Michael, after a discussion with your mother, we have decided that you must leave this house immediately. You have 14 days to vacate. You will not be allowed to return. We will take whatever actions are necessary to enforce this decision. They sign it. Mark and Christina Rotundo. You know, when you start getting letters from your mom and dad that aren't signed mom and dad, that's when you know you have a problem. Okay? My parents start writing me letters, Jan and Dorla. Doctors, Jan and Dorla, I know I am screwed, right? That's then they got a lawyer. Their other was a little bit longer and more legalese, and clearly it was written by I think an attorney. Then they offered him money. They offered him $1,100. He took the money and spent it. This guy's a piece of work. Anyway, when I get back, I was talking about the pot thing because this is an interview with the Daily Mail outside the courthouse on Tuesday, and a reporter is basically saying, "Hey, is this just like a personal fight, or is there like a bigger battle at play here?" Listen to this guy talking. Listen to this man-child explaining his purpose in life.
Are you taking this to court for a larger idea of, like, parental rights and what they're able to do, or is it just, like, on a personal matter?
No, it's, well, when you handle any case, it's inclusive of everything. So it was inclusive of everything. What I'm doing is inclusive of everything. I really can't comment on. I was trying not to do much of a comment on anything, but I'm so outraged.
Yeah. So, I mean, I have a feeling that this is going to probably be, you know, wrapped up into millennials and that sort of thing.
You
think? Do you have any thoughts on that?
I've gotten a lot of communique
from
conservative people.
Conservatives!
And,
yeah.
It's as soon as they find out that you're standing your ground, they're just like, you know, I guess that's not liberal millennial what I thought.
As soon as they find out you're standing your ground, talking about conservatives, they're like, I guess that's not the liberal millennial I thought. I don't know what conservatives he's been receiving communique from, but I'm pretty sure none of them listen to this program, because I am fairly certain that all of you think this guy is absolutely nuts. But do you see how brilliant he thinks he is? He thinks that this is a fight that he is bringing on behalf of the world. When I say the world, I'm not exaggerating. He said it's inclusive of everything. So, yeah, it's inclusive of everything. So it was inclusive of everything. He said it like three times. Oh, my God, four times. What I'm doing is inclusive of everything. See how inclusive he is? Isn't this a good thing? What do you think? Oh, you know what? I wasn't going to do it. Play number five. Robbie, number five, clip number five here about the money. This is, and it's bad audio. Bear with me here. Listen to this audio. Crazy.
One of the notices said they would give you $1,100 yep. to get set up on your way. Why didn't you accept that?
I did accept it, and I had it.
So you have the $1,100?
Yeah, I used it for expenses.
So why didn't you use it to find a place to live?
Because it would only be 1 month with the deposit and the first month. So it really wasn't feasible for me to use that for that. I had to use it for other things.
Okay, now, trust me, this is not just a funny story that I'm sharing with you. I want to make this really clear, because there's a greater point, and there's some very important information I need to give all of you. If you own a house and you've let anyone, including your child, stay there longer than 30 days. Okay, so just, that includes Airbnbs, everything. So just, there's going to be some really good legal guidance at the end of this. But I got to tell the story linearly. So this guy lives in his parents' house rent-free for years. His parents, finally sick of it, try to get him out. He won't leave. They have to take him to court, initiate eviction proceedings against him. Right? You think you can just get your kid to leave when you tell him to leave? Uh-uh. You got to go through this whole process. They then get advice from a lawyer to give the guy some money to leave, like, you know, entice him out like you would, you know, if you've got a rat in the house or something. Put a little cheese just outside the door and the rat will run out the door and get the cheese and then he's out of your house. Didn't work. He took the cheese. He took the $1,100. And then what did he say? Yeah, I did accept it, and I had it. The reporter goes, so you had the $1,100? Yeah, Rotundo says. I used it for expenses. Weed! He bought weed with it. That's what he did. And then later, he goes, well, wait a minute. Weren't you supposed to get a place to stay with that? But yeah, that would only have covered the deposit and the first month's rent. What the hell am I going to do after that? I know what you all are thinking, right? You get a job. That's what you do. Mike, all right. You know it's bad when even CNN, when even CNN is starting to sound logical. Here is Brooke Baldwin Wednesday talking to Michael Rotunda, the man-child.
You tell me you want to move out of your parents' house. Why don't you just move out of your parents' house, like tomorrow?
I don't have the means to do that tomorrow.
Okay. So, do you have a job?
No.
Are you trying to get a job? Are you working on that?
I have plans to be able to provide myself with the income I need to support myself, but it's not something that's going to come together tomorrow. So I'm trying to do what's best for me, and you know, I do want to leave, and I want to leave as soon as possible. But you know, it's not tomorrow. I don't think it should have to be tomorrow.
If you have somebody like this living in your house, whether they're related to you or not, immediately right now, call a real estate attorney. You have to get them out. And by the way, in most jurisdictions, just so you know, most jurisdictions, after 30 days, a guest, invited or uninvited, gets tenant rights. There's a big story. Oregon has some of the best squatter rights, and they've got people basically coming into vacant homes and asserting. In law school, you learn about adverse possession. This is when somebody goes and squats on a piece of property, and over time, if they meet certain criteria, can actually take over ownership of that property. Well, the fact of the matter is that common law that goes back to England still exists codified in most states' books. So where is the story? In Portland, of course, all nutty things happen in Portland. There's a guy, a homeless guy. Well, he was homeless, but he was trying to be home full. So he found a house that was empty. He saw some workers working on it. And basically snuck in, okay, called a locksmith. The locksmith came. He paid the locksmith $100 to change the locks on the door. He then proceeded to call the public utility in Portland, got the utilities changed into his name. They never notified the owner, right? How crazy is that? Never notified the owner. And then the owner had to go through an entire court process to get him out, call the police. And the police, by the way, in Portland, they don't even like to get involved if the squatter has been there longer than a few days. Because at that point, they see it as a civil issue. So you call the police to protect your private property, and they're like, yeah, I'm not going to help you. Tell me if you think that's not insane. There are websites, Squat to Own is one of them, that actually gives tips on how to illegally occupy a premises. Reclaim, a Portland real estate listings, that's another one. They say make the place look as homey as possible before police arrive, even suggesting the squatter make brownies for the neighbors. This is epic. And you know, by the way, this is liberalism. This is exactly how liberals view private property. Liberals are all redistributionists at heart, right? When they read stories about the Cultural Revolution, about the Bolshevik Revolution, they read about, you know, communist socialist revolutions. And the best part, the stuff that really literally makes them jump up and down, is the idea of the rich getting soaked. The rich. You know who's rich, by the way? This guy in Portland, the owner of this house. You know why he's rich? He was flipping this house. He had enough money to go out and be a real estate speculator. How dare he? I mean, I hear how these people talk. Airbnb, this is a big problem too. Airbnb, there was a gal in San Francisco in a home in Palm Springs, and had an Airbnb guest stay for 43 days. He didn't have any reviews. He didn't have any history on the site, but he wanted to stay 44 days, and then he wouldn't leave. And after 30 days, you get tenant rights in California, and she had to go through an entire eviction process. But in that process, he sued her for damages, and it's ongoing, and it's a big mess. Don't do look, if anything, if you want to be safe, don't do Airbnb rentals for longer than 20, 29 days. Really don't do it. And the other thing I would recommend, if you own property, get everything in writing. Even with your kid, if you've got a teenager, 17, and they're turning 18, and they're going to be living at home, have them sign a lease. And by the way, this isn't just as, I'm not talking to you just as a lawyer or as a conservative talk show. So I'm telling you, this is as a father, okay, I am going to do this with my kids right now. Promise you, you guys will keep me honest on this. Let's see, Daniel will be turning 18 in 8 years. So in 8 years, if he is attending college locally and living at home, which for his sake, I hope he's not. But if that is the case, he's going to be signing a lease. And that lease may not necessarily be money that he's paying, but he's going to be paying in services. There's something that he's going to be doing to contribute. The reason that this kid in New York, this Rotundo character, is such a limp idiot is because his parents have never held him accountable to anything. It took them, 30 now? It took them 12 years to finally boot him? See, these wastrels of humans, I don't want to call them animals because I'm going to, I already called him a rat, right? So technically I'm going to get protested here. But you get my point. These waste of human potential, it's a total waste, happens because of bad parenting. 99% of the time, this is what happens. Expectations are what kids crave, what adult children, especially, if reality doesn't hit at 18, it's never going to hit. Never, ever, ever. So put in a lease. Say you do the yard work. You got to pick up your younger siblings every day from school. You got to do something. You got to contribute. Contribution not only is a matter of accountability, but also forms a sense of pride. And that pride is what helps develop young adults into contributing solid members of society. Trust me on this. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, back right after this.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, back alive and well. Short break, but I need those occasionally to rejuvenate. Not to smoke weed. Okay, if you don't know what I'm referencing, it was that previous segment. Okay. There was a piece by Karl Rove in the Wall Street Journal, A Grim Prognosis for Trump Derangement. And Karl Rove and I, for once, recently agree on something. And that is that the Democrats' hard attack left is not a winning strategy in the 2018 midterms. Now, I've talked about this before. I think that this is relevant insofar as it helps us predict what will happen. The purpose of this program is twofold. Well, threefold. First of all, I'm here to entertain you. I want you to be entertained. But I want you to be informed about what's going on. And third, I want you to be able to predict to some extent, see what's happening in the future. That is crucial. That's why what's happening today matters, because you want to be ahead of the curve. You want to see, well, if the you-know-what is hitting the fan, you want to know that it's going to, so you can take cover. So here is what I think is happening. I think what I'm seeing, and Karl Rove in his article writes this, talking about the State Representative Stacey Abrams. Now, she's the younger, single black lady that won the Georgia Democratic primary for the gubernatorial race. In the media, if you've heard about the story, it's been referred to as a groundbreaking achievement, quote unquote. Now, a groundbreaking achievement means that they haven't analyzed anything. They see simply the color of her skin, they see her gender, and they see that it's in Georgia, and they go, oh, this is amazing, oh, yes, oh, we're going to win. I don't even need to play any sound bites from CNN. That's basically what I was listening to all week. So, not so fast. This woman owes $54,000 in back taxes to the government. Her sister married some ex-con who got acquitted. I understand that she's a judge, but weird stuff going on. She's very progressive. She thinks, right, this Stacey Abrams cat thinks that the only reason the Georgia Democrats had a poor showing in 2014 is that they were middle of the road. Okay. What do you know about Georgia? Anyone? Middle of the road? I mean, well, it's not left-wing California. That's for damn skippy sure. So if you're a left-wing, you know, collectivist Democrat running in Georgia, you can't run as such. You can't be a radical. It's not going to win. No chance, no how. And these people are so lost in their anti-Trump minds that they think that they're going to win on this alone. They think that a hardtack left is going to do the job. And I'm telling you right now, it's not. Maybe in California can win. Kind of. But even in California, you have to be careful. This fits so closely in with last week's MS-13 story and Trump. Do you remember this? Refresher. Trump calls MS-13 members gang members. My friend's mom, Elaine Genoway, the mayor of Laguna Niguel down here in Orange County, she's in the room. It was clearly referencing MS-13 gang members, the people that chop up kids, rape, pillage, and burn, the most brutal gang that we have on American soil. Trump calls them animals, and the outcry from the left is just insane. Now, here's Trump addressing it this week. We didn't have a Trump response last week when we did the show, but we have it now. Listen to this.
I noticed recently where Democrats, Nancy Pelosi, as an example, are trying to defend MS-13 gang members. I called them animals the other day, and I was met with rebuke. They said, they're people. They're not people. These are animals. And we have to be very, very tough.
Trump and the Republicans, too, if they're smart, are going to hang this albatross on the necks of every Democrat running in the race. Nancy Pelosi defending MS-13. And if you didn't catch this segment, we talked all about it last week, played the audio. Go to the Sam Nation archives, go to iTunes, get it. But my point is this. They are taking such a hard tack left. It is an indefensible position. Forget the mischaracterization of what Trump said or didn't say. That at this point is irrelevant. You have Democrats going on the record saying, oh, we gotta be sympathetic to MS-13. They have souls. They are people too. And, you know, middle America, even people that don't really care about Trump too much, they're listening to that and they're going, ew, shut up. It's alienating. And it's alienating to very people that the Democrats are going to need to win in November. So anyway, we have our Friday Funny segment up next. This is becoming a fixture here on the program. It's from Canada again. I can't believe this. Canada is becoming... No, I'm not. It's the new Florida. Sam Berjofsky, Sam Nation. Don't go anywhere.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam, Sam Berjofsky. You'll find him very anything. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
See, that's a show open. There we go. Friday Funny out of Alberta, Canada. There's a Discovery Wildlife Park there. They have all sorts of animals, including bears. And it was one bear that got the zoo into some deep, deep, you know what? What happened was... is apparently in Canada, you need a permit to transport a wild animal. You at least need to give notice to the cops. Would it be the Canadian, the Royal Mounted Police, the RCP? Well, they drive cars now. Yeah, that's true. But back in the day, they were all on horseback. Or they drove those dog sled teams. Well, anyway, to transport a wild animal, you need a permit. You need prior authorization from the cops. And apparently this zoo, this Discovery Wildlife Park in Alberta, Canada, what did they do? They took a bear to get ice cream without notifying the cops. Yes, my friends, you heard that correctly. Here is what happened. Discovery Wildlife Park in Alberta, Canada drove Berkeley the bear to a Dairy Queen to get an ice cream and shared a video of him being fed through a window by the store's owner. And yes, I am looking at a picture of this. According to the Canadian press, the zoo's permit requires them to alert authorities before moving animals out of the zoo. Now, the owner said they were busy. They made a mistake. Sorry. We failed to notify Fish and Wildlife. We've been in operation for over 28 years, and we've never done this before. Blah, blah, blah. Now, nobody stopped to ask the bear. He seems very happy in all of this. No, do you like Dairy Queen? I guess, you know, it's a good outing. Compared to, we're back to animals. This is why we need to seal up that northern border, right? You literally have animals running loose in Canada. We wouldn't want them infiltrating the United States. I am actually far less concerned about this bear than I am with all the Syrian refugees up in Canada. They let them run around loose without a permit. Seem to not be any problem. Terrorism and attacks on the rise. Rapes, violent crimes, etc., etc. Nobody cares because, you know, can't talk about that in Justin Trudeau land. That is a no-go of speech. There's no First Amendment rights in Canada, so you literally can be charged with a hate crime for even bringing it up. Meanwhile, they're harassing some people that have a wildlife sanctuary about taking their bear to a Dairy Queen. Yeah, I know this is a funny segment. I didn't mean to make it get all political, but honestly, cut the bear a break, no? By the way, I think a bear that's eating ice cream cones and blizzards is probably not going to be eating people. I don't know what Canadian tastes like. I imagine it's a little chewier and leaner, probably leaner than American, just generally speaking. More free range. I didn't know. This is a comedy segment, Sam, not a Jeffrey Dahmer segment. Get it straight. So anyway, my favorite thing about this article is that it's written by Rebecca Taylor, the Cub reporter. All right, we're back after the Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation. Okay, I would be remiss if I were not to touch upon this, although I'll develop it in the coming weeks ahead on the program. The investigation into Trump-Russia collusion is beginning to look more and more like a total criminal setup. Now, what I mean by this, and I have to remind you of this to just put some perspective onto what is going on. The Russian interference with our election in 2016 is the genesis of everything that has come since, including that of appointing Robert Mueller as the independent investigator or independent counsel investigating Trump-Russia collusion. But it all goes back to what issue, what point in time, what problem. Do you remember what this was? Yes. It was the DNC hack, right? It when the very embarrassing emails came out about Hillary Clinton and Donna Brazile, right? Back and forth, her people are talking about how they needed to rig the election for Hillary. Those emails probably did not help Hillary Clinton very much. What was the assumption taken by, I don't know, the media, the general, you know, left-leaning public, the Hillary people, the thinking was we was robbed. We got taken. They released embarrassing emails on Hillary and not on Trump. So whoever they are, well, the hackers, but whoever's behind the hackers, those are people that are interfering in our election. This is absolutely true, by the way, because we were also told that there was no interference with voting machines, right? It wasn't It wasn't interference with voting machines. It was spreading bad stuff about Hillary. And the worst thing spread about Hillary, in my opinion, I think you agree with me, even if you love Hillary and think I'm wrong most of the time, you're going to think it was those emails, right? It was finding out that those two ladies had conspired to rob Bernie Sanders of what was likely a win in the primary. Okay, let me ask you this. Why in God's name did the Obama administration and his Justice Department specifically not immediately move to do what? A search warrant and take and analyze the server. The DNC server that was hacked was the most crucial piece of evidence, okay? That was available at the time to figure out who did what. And they never did. The Loretta Lynch's Justice Department, Obama's Justice Department, never took possession of the server. James Comey, the Boy Scout, the most honest man in Washington, the top professional law enforcement officer, was too busy drafting Hillary Clinton's exoneration and didn't make any time for investigating what was billed and has been since billed as the greatest crime in history, right? That 2016 election that was stolen from Hillary Clinton because of some shadowy actors, more likely than not, some Russians working, colluding with Trump. There's a very real reason why, of course, the Obama administration didn't go and take their own party's server and have it analyzed by independent law enforcement professionals. And why is that? Anybody? Anybody? Because the stuff that got out is only a fraction of the dirty tricks and bad moves and bad acts, possibly criminal acts, that the Democrats were pulling during that election. And they knew it. And they knew it. Debbie Wasserman Schultz, that swamp thing that was DNC chair at the time, was probably on the phone every day to Obama going, you do not want to touch this. Don't want to touch. The real original collusion here was between the Obama White House and the DNC to cover up what they had done in the election. And because they're brilliant and because they're absolutely shrewd operators and because they also had a Loretta Lynch and Hillary Clinton and Obama were all very comfortable working together to achieve a common purpose, a.k.a. keeping Trump out of the White House, they were very okay with spinning this as a story. If the server isn't turned over and if the server isn't analyzed, right, then you can't ever prove conclusively what was done to it. And it's what happened next that really should have your blood boiling. I'll be back, and I'll tell you what that is right after this. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
Gentlemen, here's Johnny.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rogowski. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
So if the original problem, the original issue that started this entire 2016 election tampering investigation was the hack of the DNC server, why didn't the FBI seize the most crucial piece of evidence? It's fascinating, isn't it? At the same time, the FBI literally gives immunity to every single close associate of Hillary Clinton, right? The guy who set up her email server, the homebrew server that ended up getting her into some hot water and was clearly criminal, even though it was not prosecuted. Cheryl Mills, all these people around Hillary Clinton and Huma Abedin all got immunity. You know what was going on at the same exact time? There was an operation billed by the CIA and the FBI called Crossfire Hurricane to investigate Trump. So they're not seizing evidence, real evidence. They're busy fabricating it. And the story that's coming out right now is a pretty convoluted tale. And I will make it more simple here as the weeks go on. I'm not going to get into all of it today. But it seems to be that the CIA and the FBI used a couple of informants, paid people, to get with people inside the Trump campaign and trap them in some BS conferences. For example, that one guy, what was his name? Not Carter Page, but the other one, the guy with the Greek name. But anyway, he, Papadakis or something, I don't know. Papadopoulos, Papadakis, somebody else. But anyway, Papadopoulos has, he's a young guy. He literally on his resume that he sent to the Trump campaign puts on it, I did Model United Nations in high school. That was literally on his resume. This guy was an amateur. So you know what the CIA plant did? The CIA plant invited him to a London conference. And at this London conference, oh, but paid for him, said, I'll pay full airfare, put you up in a hotel, and I'll pay you $3,000 to speak to us at this conference. Well, what a schmuck that literally puts, I did UN, Model UN in high school. He's not going to take up that offer. Come on. He was on the next plane, pew, gone and over there. And in there, they got him drunk, took him out for drinks, and said something about Russians. And he said, yeah, Russians, yeah, da, 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 da. And boom. That's the information that they use, together with that Christopher Steele dossier that's been totally discredited, also paid for by the Hillary Clinton campaign, to convince a FISA court judge to issue wiretaps on the Trump campaign. And so began a spy campaign, literally surveillance, a counterintelligence surveillance operation by one administration of the opposing candidate running for office. When all is said and done, my friends, that is going to be the story. I know a lot of these articles, a lot of these pieces, and how it is explained in the news makes it very complicated. It's not. It's easy. It's straightforward. This was a con job from the very beginning. And you can call it spying. You can call it election tampering. You can call it high crimes and misdemeanors. But I'm telling you right now, this is going to go all the way up to the top. And I'll get into this in the weeks to come because I will break down what this is all about. The trail is going to lead all the way to Obama. People like Clapper, people like Brennan, even James Comey are really in deep, deep crap. And I hope they get their comeuppance because I don't care if you're a Republican or Democrat, conservative, liberal, hate Trump, love Trump, doesn't matter. These kind of shenanigans, regardless of what party does them, has no place in our society. And by the way, the greater comment on this is these FISA courts and everything, these so-called constitutional protections that we have, they have all been stripped away gradually. And it's time we, through this investigation, reclaim our rights. All right. The podcast will be up soon. If you've listened to these words, you found it. Tell a friend. Explain to them. It's on iTunes. Also, you can go to samnation.com. There it is. It lives, the full archive. Also, news and stuff. Follow us on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram. Giddy up. Let's have a great Memorial Day weekend. Thank a veteran. We have everything we have because of them. Sam Rajofsky, Sam Nation, over and out. Soldier.